You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson, back again with our good buddy, the veteran leader of the RedLegNation.com editors, our Scott Rowland, if you will, Bill Lack. You doing all right today, Bill?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I've changed my handle. I'm now the voice of reason.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
For our listeners, we maybe have a little bit of a technical difficulty. If you're hearing a delay between Chad and I, it's something that Skype is doing. So kind of bear with us.
Yeah, well, hopefully, and maybe I can fix some of that in the editing process as well. But anyway, glad to have you back, Bill. And we were just talking a little bit about the All-Star game briefly. It's kind of a fun thing to have four Reds going to the All-Star game, sort of a new thing for an entire generation of Reds fans. What do you think about that whole All-Star process?
Well, I was glad that we could have I don't know how big a piece we had of helping Joey Votto make the team, but it's nice that we were a part of it. I have to admit, as you and I were talking about off the air here, that I didn't watch one pitch last night. I haven't had an interest in the All-Star game in years. I'm glad to see the Reds that were deserving were there. I wish Arthur Rhodes could have gotten in the ball game. Is one of our posters put up today, you know, Phillips and Rowland and Votto will probably all get shots again, even though Rowland you can wonder about. But Arthur Rhodes probably will never get another shot at the All-Star game, and it would have been nice if he could have gotten a ball game last night.
Yeah, that was actually me that posted that, so I'm glad it made such an impression on you. It's the first thing I've ever written that actually stuck in your brain.
That's true. That is very true.
But I'm the same. Obviously, that's my feeling about it. I was happy to see those guys. I was happy. The whole Vote Votto thing was a lot of fun, and you know, we had some we helped in some way getting him on there. I hope, and it was fun to support a guy that should have made it the first time around, and certainly Votto was deserving. It was fun to watch him make it. Brandon Phillips as well had an unbelievable year, and he's just been a joy to watch this season. Glad to see him make it. But Arthur Rhodes, in one way, it doesn't bother me that he didn't pitch because he needs all the rest he can get, and he's going to need to play a big role for the Reds down the stretch. But on the other hand, like you said, he's probably never going to make the All-Star game again. Roland's made a ton of them. Votto and Phillips have chances to make it in the future, but wouldn't that have been nice to see him at least maybe come in and face one batter or something? A 40-year-old guy making his first All-Star game, that doesn't happen very often. So, but even though he didn't pitch, I did watch the games. First time I've watched one in, I'm not sure when, myself. It's been so long. But I did watch. It was actually a pretty good game. Enjoyed it.
Going back to the Votto thing here for a minute, you know, like you said, he should have been picked straight away. But this may end up turning out to benefit Joey Votto, and this has been mentioned in the press in a number of places. He got a ton of publicity, ton of love from ESPN and some of the other major media outlets. And if he continues to play the way he is playing now, when they start voting for MVP and those kinds of things at the end of the year, this publicity that he got over this All-Star vote sure isn't going to hurt him.
It was insane to watch Votto popping up on SportsCenter and you know, everyone talking about how he got robbed, basically. And I agree with you, and you'd actually said that early on, you know, hey, this might be a good thing, not just for Votto, but for the Reds. They're getting some publicity. People are paying attention to what they're doing. And for the first time, people everywhere know who Joey Votto is. What he's been doing. So yeah, it's absolutely a good thing, I think, for him. And as it worked out, a lot of publicity for a up and coming ball club here that's had a surprising season. And for a guy, Joey Votto, who we've all known for a long time is just a stud, good to see him getting some of that publicity, even though he doesn't ever seek it out himself. And, I'm with you. I think that it was going to end up being a good thing since he ended up actually making the team,
Yep. And that's really about all I got on the All-Star game.
Well, I'll add one last thing. I thought it was interesting that some of the analysis we've talked at Red Leg Nation all season long, basically, about how the Reds have been really aggressive taking that extra base, and that's been one of their trademarks, and we've written about it several times. Last night, Scott Rolen and a lot of the analysts after the game just talked about this being the sort of the turning point in the game, if you can have a turning point in an exhibition game like that. But Scott Rolen was on first, and Matt Holliday of the Stupid Cardinals got a single, and Rolen went first to third, you know, busted his tail getting all the way to third. And everybody was just sort of, it opened their eyes a little bit, you know, and of course we've been watching all year, so it was no surprise to us, but they had a microphone on Brandon Phillips that time in the National League dugout. He said, that's what we do in Cincinnati. We go first to third, baby. And it was kind of a fun moment. And it was fun for me to sort of see the national press sort of wake up to the fact that that is kind of the way Cincinnati's been playing this year. They've been playing hard. They've been, you know, taking that extra base and doing those little things. It's kind of interesting to see that the world's getting to – that was, I guess what I'm trying to say is that was a good representation of what the Reds organization in 2010 has been about. So that was another positive that comes out of the All-Star game. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but I just thought that was sort of interesting.
Nope. Move on. What's next?
All right. What's next? How about the first half of the season? Let's wrap that up before we move into the second half. I do want to do a preview of the second half today, but you know, before the season, we did our season preview, I guess to sum up what we thought early on was that the Reds would be a little better than they were last year, have a chance of maybe being above 500. We thought the pitching would be pretty good. We thought the offense would be slightly better than it was last year, but didn't see how it would be, you know, a ton better. What do you think? Where were we wrong? And we're sitting here with the Reds a game up in first place in the Central, one of the best offense in the league over the first half. Where were we wrong? And how would you sum up the first half of this season?
I would sum it up as fun, but yeah, we were way off. I mean, you know, none of us, and I don't think there was anybody, even on any of our posters on the blog that anticipated the Reds' offense playing as well as they played. I mean, I'm looking at the starting eight here, and they've got 6 guys in the starting lineup with an OPS plus over 100. You know, and they got a catcher that splits time with an OPS plus of 150. You know, they got a bench guy with an OPS plus of 147. It's unbelievable how well they've hit. Now, you know, are they going to continue to hit at that level? I hope so. But, you know, they've also got a guy in the two-hole with an OPS plus of 63. They sure do. You sure hope he improves in the second half. You know, we got 79 games out of Scott Rolen in the first half. We're going to need 79, you know, we're going to need games, you know, somewhere close to that amount out of him in the second half for this team to compete. This team cannot afford to lose Votto, Phillips, or Rolen for any extended period of time.
No, they've been pretty lucky, at least in terms of their of the hitting, with respect to injuries in the first half. You know, Rolen's had a little bit of some back issues and been out here and there, and you know, there's been a little bit of that, but not a lot. And you're right, having Rolen in the lineup full time has been a big key. And that's one of the things we said early on was that this team could not compete if they had a lot of injuries because they don't have any depth. This organization still doesn't have enough depth, you know, to recover from injuries to some of those big guys. But they've all been unbelievable. Johnny Gomes has hit way better than anybody could have hoped for. You know, Votto's been Votto. Bruce has been good. Rolen's been better than anybody would have expected. His power's come back. Brandon Phillips been better than what anybody would have expected. Now, in the second half, I think that's the big question. Which ones of these guys are going to, you know, continue hitting that well? You would hope Orlando Cabrera, who's been simply a disaster this season, you'd hope, and you mentioned him a moment ago, you'd hope he'd hit a little better in the second half. You can't really expect Johnny Gomes to hit as well as he hits. The rest of those guys, who knows if they're healthy? I don't know. I'd still like to see. I'd love to see a bat out of that shortstop spot. And we're not going to get that. We're stuck with Orlando Cabrera the rest of the year. But you know, I don't see him going out and making any additions to help the offense. You just got to kind of hope that these guys are going to sort of hang in there and keep doing it, keep doing what they're doing.
Well, I think you could reasonably expect Drew Stubbs to play a little better in the second half. I think you could reasonably expect Jay Bruce maybe to play a little better in the second half. Joey Votto isn't going to play any better in the second half. Brandon Phillips isn't going to play any better in the second half. I don't think it's reasonable to expect Ramon Hernandez or Ryan Hannigan to play any better in the second half. But when are you going to get out of Heisey? And the other question is Chris Dickerson, I would assume, is going to be ready before too long. And then what happens? You know, twere it me, I think I would activate Chris Dickerson and think about cutting Lance Nix loose. What will probably happen is they'll keep Chris Dickerson and they'll send Chris Heisey back down. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I feel like that Heisey has been such a sort of revelation since he's been up here. Every time he's gotten a chance in the lineup, you know, he's hit and he's played good defense. I think they'll keep Heisey. I think that Lance Nix is the guy that's going to be sort of on the, on the train out of town. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they'll want to hang on to Nix. You know, they took a chance on losing Vladimir Ballantyn so they could keep Nix this spring, you know. And I like Nix. He's not being in great shakes this year, but I don't have any problem with Lance Nix. I don't mind having him around as your 24th guy or whatever, or 23rd guy on the roster. But they're going to have to do something, and maybe they'll send Dickerson down. I think Dickerson still has options. I like Dickerson more than Nix just because you know Dickerson's going to get on base. He always has, and, you know, he plays a pretty good defense too, not that Nix doesn't, so... he's a left-handed bat just like Nix. Maybe not going to hit it for as much power as Nix would, but I'd prefer, I think, to have Dickerson at this point.
I would, too, and I think he'll have an extended period of rehab in AAA before we ever have to make that kind of decision. So we're probably looking, I would bet, very late August or beginning of September before we probably see Chris.
Yeah, delay on that. I agree. That's probably what's going to happen. That's really been the only significant injury on the hitting side of the plate that the Reds have had has been Dickerson. Of course, he's been gone most of the season, but Reds haven't skipped a beat because Heisey came up and did exactly what they hoped for. Maybe getting Heisey into the lineup more in the second half for Stubbs and for Gomes, you know, probably not a bad idea. Let him play a little bit more and get those guys more of a break.
Yeah, the other injury you forgot about is Hannigan.
True.
But Hernandez has done a really good job while Hannigan's been hurt. I mean, you can't complain about the job Hernandez did at all. And the other thing is with Heisey, I don't have a problem with Heisey spelling Bruce against tough left-handers either once in a while.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And thanks for pointing that about Hannigan. Absolutely, that's... although, that, again, sort of like with Dickerson, it's not really been as difficult to overcome that Hannigan injury because Hernandez has. He's played fine. And you know, Corky Miller's come up, and he's not hit a lot, but the pitchers evidently love throwing to him. His catcher's ERA is better than any of the catchers. And he's got the greatest mustache in the history of the Reds, or at least in the last 25, I guess forever because the Reds didn't have mustaches for the long time. He's got that beautiful.
The last time the Reds had a mustaches like that, the Wright brothers were still playing for him.
That's right. So, but he's done fine, and helped the Reds recover from the injury to Hannigan. But I'm glad that Hannigan's going to be back for the second half, and he's defensively he's outstanding. It's clearly the best I think between him and Hernandez. Hannigan certainly has the edge defensively. Hitting wise, Hannigan's had the edge, but you can't complain about what Hernandez has given you either. So, and those guys, who knows how much they're going to be able to keep that up in the second half. But I think all these guys, if they stay healthy, with possibly the exception of Gomes, who's probably due to drop some, there's some chance these guys could keep it going. The Reds don't have to be the top offense in the league, I don't think, to still be a competitive team in the Central. So, a lot to look forward to on that side of the ledger. the pitching in the first half, been some more injuries. You know, let's just talk about the starting rotation. First of all, you know, obviously Homer Bailey's been hurt. Here lately, Aaron Harang went on the disabled list. But the Reds have, I guess the first place to talk about with the pitching staff is the rookies have come in and just done an outstanding job. Three rookie pitchers, two lefties and one righty, have been fantastic. Couldn't have seen that one coming.
No, you really can't. You can't complain about it. Well, and actually two lefties and two righties if you want to count LeCure.
True.
And he didn't do a bad job. He kept them in the ball games. You know, he hasn't been as good as the other three, but I'm not complaining about the job Sam did when he was up here. I mean, we've talked at length about Mike Leake, and he's been amazing. If they catch up to him a little bit here in the second half, I don't think that's going to surprise anybody. The big question I have is how they're going to keep his innings down to a point where he can continue to help the team late in the season, but yet we don't take a chance of hurting the kid. And I don't know what the answer is to that. Travis Wood, to me, has been amazing in two out of his three starts. And the only one that he wasn't completely amazing was a short start where he took the ball on 3 days' rest. Maloney has done a nice job. You can't say enough about the job these kids have done coming up from Louisville, which just shows you the kind of depth that we have in this organization right now at pitcher.
Yeah, it's been sort of a revelation to see these young guys. I'm glad you mentioned LeCure because he's one that I forgot. He didn't do as well as some of the others, but still, he hung in there and had some bad luck. And no complaints with Sam LeCure's job. You're right. Sort of the balancing act, the tightrope act that they're going to be working with Mike Leake is going to be interesting. And, you know, with Dusty Baker right in the mix, it obviously going to worry everybody. But the Reds are, you know, they've got to watch his innings, and they've said over and over that they want to. And they've been pretty good about watching his pitch counts, and they've skipped him a start or two and so far. But, you know, we're going to get down to August and September here, and the Reds are likely to be in the middle of a pennant race. And Mike Leake has been, you know, at worst, the second most effective starting pitcher that they've had in the first half. I don't know how they're going to do it either, and I don't envy the decision makers in Cincinnati that have to decide when we're going to skip his starts and how we're going to limit his innings, because they're going to need him down the stretch if they're going to compete. I don't envy them. Possibly the fact that Travis Wood has come up and you know, done so well, and they can sort of plug him in as well to help spell Leak. Wood, obviously, that perfect game he was chasing where he took a perfect game into the ninth. What a game that was. You know, and he's actually been a lot like Leak. And I'll let you give your opinion on this, but I've gotten the sense he's a whole lot like Mike Leake in the sense that you watch those guys on the mound and you think they're 15-year veterans out there. Just really been impressive in terms of their makeup, and they don't get rattled out there.
They sure don't seem to. I mean, they look like they have their composure. You wonder with the game that they got blown in Philadelphia with Leake the other night, whether he should have, you know, if he was as gassed as he looked, you know, should he have told Baker that he didn't have anything left? You know, maybe, I don't know, but he's 22 years old. You know, he still thinks he's got something to prove. The biggest thing to me about the rotation in the second half is there's going to be a lot of interesting decisions that have to be made. You know, with Wood, with Leake, with Bailey, with Volquez coming back. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with all these guys. And I don't know how you put a guy in. You know, if you say you skip Leake a start and you shove Wood in there that one time around rotation, how do you keep Wood fresh? You know, so that he's pitched enough so that he's accurate. You know, and that he's not out there on too much rest. You know, people talk about doing matchups and all these other things, and I don't know how you do it and keep these guys so that they're on some type of schedule for their throwing so that they're effective.
Yeah, it's a ton of decisions they're going to have to make, and again, that's why I guess they're paid the big bucks. You and I out here in Blogland can sit and watch and criticize, but that's a situation where I don't know that I'd want to be in their shoes, because you mentioned a couple things, and a couple of pitchers, and I want to get into them a little bit more in a moment, but that's Homer Bailey and Edinson Volquez. They're going to have some serious decisions to make that we hadn't even talked about in terms of decisions because, they've gotten such good work out of these rookies coming up. It's been okay. They've sort of absorbed those losses. I wouldn't be surprised to see, these guys spending some time in the bullpen maybe. I'm like you. I don't know what they're going to do. Down the stretch, Bronson Arroyo is going to be there. He's had a fine year. He's sort of the league average innings eater he's always been. Johnny Cueto to me has been outstanding. He's 8-2 with a 3.42 ERA. He's got the best ERA plus on the team. Cueto, especially in the last month and a half or so, really looks like he started to mature a little bit and, I could not be more pleased with what Cueto's done in the first half. Those two guys plus Leak are the guarantees for the second half. What do you do if you're in charge of the Reds in the second half? You've got Homer Bailey hopefully coming back soon. Aaron Harang's supposed to be back soon. And you've got Travis Wood, who's, in three starts has an ERA of 2.18, an ERA plus of 196. What do? You tell me. Because I don't know.
I don't either. And I mean, everybody talks about Harang, trading him, whatever. But for his salary and stuff, you're not going to get anything for him. He's in his walk year. And if he does, if they don't trade him, he's going to be in the rotation. I don't see this team and the management and organization of this team taking Aaron Harang out of the rotation. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. There are other guys with better numbers, but I'm not convinced that Aaron Harang would be effective out of the bullpen either. We've talked, there's been talk among the fans of Volquez working out of the bullpen, but there's been no indication from the Reds team that that's going to happen. He worked in his rehab starts as a starter, and that's the only thing that they've talked about. In fact, I think on the Reds broadcast on Sunday, John Fay and Marty were talking, and they both said that they wouldn't be surprised to see if Volquez be the starter on Friday night. Bailey, he's 24 years old. I don't know if his arm is conducive to throwing out of the bullpen. I don't know what they're going to do. It's a good mess, but it's a mess.
Yeah, that's a fact. I guess if you put a gun to my head and had to get me to make the decision here, I think you're right about Harang. I think he's going to be he'll be back here in the next week, and he's going to be in the rotation. So you add him to Leak, Cueto, and Arroyo. There's four of your five. And then we've always thought that bringing Volquez back slowly and putting him in the bullpen might have been the best option. He's done awfully well starting in the minor leagues. And I think that you're right. I think that's what they intend to do is start him. And if they're convinced that he's ready to go as a starting pitcher, the guy won 17 games a couple years ago and made the All-Star team. He's going to be in the rotation, period. If they think he's ready to take on that workload, and maybe his performance-enhancing drugs assisted him in getting ready to take on that workload, but the fact is, if he's ready, he's going to be in there. There's your five. That leaves a Homer Bailey and Travis Wood, I guess, are the two big names without a spot. I think Travis Wood could, they send him down, I guess. It's hard to do when he's pitched so well. But then I heard the story of when Kent Merker, one of our former Reds, when he was a rookie with Atlanta, he threw a no-hitter, or maybe it was his second year, and they actually skipped his next start after his no-hitter. So not unprecedented for Wood to – because there's not enough spots to go around. Homer Bailey, you and I have been huge Bailey supporters, and I don't think either of us are anywhere close to wanting to give up on a 24 guy that just turned 24. And so I'm not suggesting that, but it can't hurt him to move him to the pen, I wouldn't think. I think about Phil Hughes with the Yankees, and Hughes, of course, and Homer Bailey were sort of the 1A, 1 and 1A of the pitching prospects there at one time when they were in the minors. And he's sort of been jerked back and forth, but being in the bullpen didn't hurt him. He was on the All-Star team this week for the American League. So that might be the one logical move, assuming Bailey is back sometime soon. I'm still not convinced that there's not something more seriously wrong with him than what's been let on. We'll see. But I guess probably if it were up to me, I'd move Bailey to the pen, have him pitch in sort of middle relief or in the setup role even with his stuff, letting him air it out for an inning, you know, late. He could do a good job. They're certainly better than Nick Massett's done. And Travis Wood gets sort of left out in the cold. You're right. I don't want to make the decision. But I guess having a lot of options like that, it's a good thing. A good thing to have. What were they going to do if they traded for Cliff Lee? The Reds were right down to the wire, evidently, in the Cliff Lee talks, who ended up getting traded to the Rangers. Clearly, he'd be the number one starter if they plugged him in. What would they have done then?
We don't have any idea what they were going to give up for him either.
That's true.
Back to Bailey for a second and moving him to the bullpen. You know, the Reds have said all along they'd like to have a fireballer out of there. And in fact, they even moved Chapman into the bullpen in Louisville to get him ready for pitching in the big league level out of the bullpen. Well, that doesn't seem like it's going to be a quick process. But Bailey could easily fill that role too, you know, that they wanted Chapman to fill. Just the thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any downside really to it, unless you want to talk about his development as a starter. But, that's overblown as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's any downside to it. And I don't know if the Reds are going to be in on. There's been some talk about Roy Oswalt or who else have there been talk about in terms of the Reds trying to come up with another pitcher. I'd like to see him have a top of the rotation type guy for the stretch run and certainly for the playoffs if they made it. What about getting Volquez back when he's at his best? You and I have both said he's just a terrific joy to watch pitch. You know, his pitches are moving and he's just fun to watch. That's, if he comes back at his best, and who knows whether he will or not, he's been pretty good in the minors, but hey, that's kind of like plugging a number one or two guy in there that just, making a trade for somebody without having to give up anything. That's something that some of these other teams don't have. If the best happens there and if that works out well, that's kind of like, trading for maybe not a Cliff Lee, but somebody close to that caliber.
Yeah, back to Bailey for a minute. The only negative that I could see out of this thing is – reemergence of Homer's questionable attitude. If he felt like he was getting pushed into a role that he wasn't happy with, and I hope that wouldn't be the case. But if I was the GM of this team, that is something I'd be concerned about with him. As for this team trying to pick up pitching for the stretch run, to me, this year, and everybody says, "Oh, you can't bank on next year." Yada yada yada. This team should be better next year than it is this year. And if they're going to make a move to try to pick somebody up in the stretch run this year, and this was my concerns with the Lee things, I don't want to. We griped and pissed and moaned and complained for years that this franchise didn't have a plan. Now they got a plan. Let's not throw that plan aside because we're a game in front at the All-Star break and mortgage the depth that this team does have to try to pick up somebody that might win a game in the playoffs if we made the playoffs. Let's stick with our plan and let's not go crazy because it seems like it's coming to fruition a year early.
Well, I agree with that, but a lot of that depends on – I guess I agree with that to a point. A lot of it depends on what the Reds would have had to give up, for example, in the Cliff Lee deal. I don't have any problem at all trading a Yonder Alonso, who evidently still has some trade value out there. And evidently, I'm not sure why, but Juan Francisco's got a bit of trade value out there. I don't mind trading those guys. I don't think that hurts the Reds over the next two or three years if they can get something out of him. And, even if they had gotten Lee and he left at the end of this year, they'd have gotten a draft pick or two out of it, a good draft pick. So, I'm actually... It depends on what you give up. I don't want to mortgage the entire future, I guess, for hopefully a stretch run here. But on the other hand, this team is kind of close to where they could be competitive. When you're this close, maybe you need to go for it. Maybe this is the time to go for it rather than waiting. it's hard to, we're sort of talking in speculation, in terms of what they would have had to give up and et cetera, but I wouldn't necessarily discount the ability to go out and get a guy like Cliff Lee, even if he was going to leave at the end of the year, just because they had to give up a little bit. I would give up a little bit for something like that because, hey, you know, a guy like that might be the difference in the Reds having success in a short series in the playoffs. So it's all speculative, but I don't mind the Reds going for it this year, frankly. I think that the division is pretty weak, that, you know, maybe one move could put them over the top of the division. And if it's the right move, it could also be one that would give them a good chance in a short series. I think a Cliff Lee deal would have been a really big in terms of a playoff series.
Yeah, and like you said, it all depends on what you'd have to give up. I agree with you. The two guys you mentioned, Alonso and Francisco, I got no problem dealing either one of those guys. Neither one of those guys are going to help this team in the next X number of years, if ever. Alonso was a wrong pick. Let's be honest. They were covering their bases in case Votto wasn't the player that they thought he was. He is. Francisco, he's a DH. I mean, at third base, he makes Edwin Encarnacion look like a gold glover. I've said it 100 times on here. But, you know, am I willing to give up those two and a Devin Mesoraco or a Travis Wood or somebody like that? No, absolutely not. You know, so it just depends on how much you're willing to give up or how much you'd have to give up as to who I'd be willing to go for.
Yeah, you and I agree on Francisco. We have the same opinion about him since the beginning. I disagree, though, that the Alonso pick was a bad pick. You know, if they truly believed he was the, you know, best available out there, and he might have been, and if he still has some trade value, you know, if they can trade him for a piece that's going to help this team, you know, I think he's brought some value to the organization out of that pick. You know, if he could have been a part of a big deal for Lee or for somebody else that helps his team, you know, they won't get any value out of him on the field, but they will have gotten some value out of that pick. I guess it all depends on how that plays out. I agree with you. I don't think that Yonder Alonso is ever going to be a contributor to a Cincinnati Reds team. You know, I just don't see how that's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Reds sign Joey Votto to a long-term deal after this season. And he's, Votto's made no secret of the fact that he loves it. He likes the fact that it's not New York, I think, in terms of the pressure on him, and he likes Cincinnati, and I wouldn't be surprised for them to ink him for the long term. But, yeah, I don't know. And I wouldn't mind trading him as a Rocco, frankly. I love the guy and appreciate the fact that he's been very kind with – he's a friend to Red Leg Nation, I guess. You did a really good interview with him before the season. But in the right deal, I don't mind dealing him. He's having an unbelievable year this year. But it is just the first time he's shown any of this, so – I don't know. I'm trying not to overvalue the prospects like I have in the past. I think people have a tendency to do that. I don't want to, you know, deal them all in a dumb deal for, you know, Gary Majeski and Bill Bray again. But, you know, I could see dealing some of these guys. When you're this close, you know, sometimes you got to sort of go all in and put your chips in the middle and take a little bit of a risk to try to do something in the postseason. I don't know. It's all speculative, though. You know, we're saying the same thing over and over, I guess.
Yeah. The other place that I think we're going to see some interesting things develop is in the bullpen in the second half. Because, like we've talked about, somebody is going to the bullpen, whether it be Bailey, Harang. I don't think neither one of us think it'll be Harang. Which means somebody in the bullpen is going to have to go. The other guy that's going to be ready, I would assume, even though I haven't heard his name in months, is our buddy Mike Lincoln.
Your
where
buddy.
Does he fit in?
That's your buddy, not mine. I don't know. I don't know where he fits in.
I mean, you know, I have to believe Jordan Smith's going to go back to the minors. The guy that's impressed me since he came back up, I think he's been phenomenal, is Logan Andrusik. He just looks fluid out there. The ball's coming out of his hand real clean. I've been very, very impressed since he came back up. And to me right now, he'd be my setup guy in front of Massa.
Yeah, I agree. Andrusik's been unbelievable since he returned from the minors. I don't know what it was about that brief time in the minors, but he's an entirely different pitcher. Yeah, you got to think Jordan Smith would be the one that's being sent back down, although he's, you know, he's been fine. He's worked out much better, I think, than either of you or I would have expected. Massett's been awful. I think that Andrusic and Smith are the guys to go, if they need to make room, obviously. I would not be surprised to see Lincoln designated for assignment at some point. He's just been nothing but terrible since day one. At some point, they got to cut bait. Are they going to want to really spend innings seeing about Mike Lincoln in the dog days of August and September? That might be a good candidate.
Depending on the line.
Right. It's one thing to give him some innings in April and May, but Lincoln has been nothing short of a disaster since day one. His ERA is over 8 in his time with the Reds. You can't waste innings, I don't think, on a guy like that. So when he comes back, I wouldn't be surprised to see him. And if they ever need room on the 40-man here, I would not be surprised to see Lincoln gone. And they will need room on the 40-man, I guess. I don't know how many they've got on it right now, but, Volquez has been on the 60-day DL, so they're going to have to move him onto the 40-man. Where are they going to find the space for him?
That's a good point. Somebody's going to have to go. Now, what you may see is them move Lincoln to the 60.
That's true. And that'd be fine by me because it puts him out of our misery. We don't have to worry about him for a while. I don't know. I think the bullpen is going to be sort of key to whether or not this team sticks in it, because we've had the bullpen has had two fairly high-profile meltdowns, historic proportion, against the game in Atlanta and the game against Philadelphia, giving up, a six-run lead in the ninth inning. And Cordero has been bad. Cordero's walked 22 guys and given up 41 hits in just 40 innings. You can't have that out of your closer. You're scared every time he comes in. Nick Massett, your primary setup man, really, certainly at least the right-handed portion of that, he's been awful. Arthur Rhodes has been unreal. But we can't expect Arthur Rhodes to have an ERA hovering around 1 for the rest of the year, especially at his age and, as much wear and tear as Dusty's putting on his arm. So, I don't know. I think getting a guy like Homer Bailey or someone in that bullpen to sort of stabilize it could be a big key to the second half. Bailey could actually maybe have, and we usually discount relievers because they don't throw as many innings, but in the right role, Bailey could maybe have more impact than he would as a starter if he could become sort of just a steady guy out of the bullpen, because they need that, especially out of a right-hander.
Yeah, that'd be a lot to ask out of a 24-year-old kid that's never worked out of the bullpen before, though.
Yeah, I agree. No easy answers here. No easy answers at all. But, something's got to give really soon with respect to that pitching staff. And again, what I keep telling myself is, really never in my lifetime that I can remember hardly have they had this much depth out of their pitchers. Other than the Jimmy Haynes era, they were great during that time. Oh, no, wait a minute, maybe not. Now, really, do you remember them being ever this deep?
In the early 70s, they were real deep in the pitching staff, and they traded, and much as, there's been a lot of talk about this. Steve Price talks about it a lot. Bob Housen didn't value a lot of their pitchers and traded it for nuts and bolts. The Milt Wilcoxes, the Ross Grimsleys, those kind of guys, they were quality major league pitchers, and Reds got basically nothing for them. But not since then have we had anything close to the depth we're talking about now.
Yeah, it's a fun problem to have. I would not be surprised to see the Reds make some kind of a splash, whether a big one or a little one. As we get to the trade deadline, though, I don't know if it'll be pitching. I don't think it'll be pitching unless they can get a Cliff Lee type, an ace type. I don't see any reason to really do that unless you can get that stud, number one or number two starter. I don't know if they'll do something for a bat, if there's something available, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Reds do something. Again, I don't know what, but I wouldn't be surprised. We've got still another couple of weeks for the trade deadline. It'll be interesting to see what they do. To sort of sum up, the second half, you posted some numbers on the Reds' remaining schedule. And, you know, if you look at it the right way, squint the right way, you know, it could be somewhat favorable to the Reds. The Reds have fewer games against teams that are above 500 in the second half than the Cardinals do, you know, so obviously more against teams that are under 500. In the last 22 games, the Reds play primarily against teams that have losing records. The Cardinals are, you know, play a lot more games against teams that have a winning record right now. Cardinals play, you know, slightly more games at home than the Reds do down the stretch. But if nothing else, the remaining schedule, you know, that's not going to be an excuse for why the Reds weren't able to hang on to this lead, I don't guess. It's perhaps slightly favorable to the good guys.
Yeah, going back to the bullpen or to making a trading deadline deal for just a second. See, I kind of differ from you. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this bullpen continues to struggle, if they don't have a setup guy that they can count on. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them make a deal for bullpen help.
Good point. Yeah, but I agree.
Going back to the schedule, I think it's pretty even. Maybe favors the Cardinals a little bit till you get to those last 22 games. If we've got a lead or we're close in them last 22 games, then I think that the assuming health and all the other intangibles, you know, and all the other things, I think the Reds got an advantage in those last 22 games. The thing is now they've got to continue to play good ball to get to that point.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, they got to get to those games. They play in their last 22 games: Pittsburgh, Arizona, Houston, Milwaukee, and San Diego. Obviously, San Diego has been a surprise this year, but those other teams, the Reds really ought to have the edge, certainly. You pointed out at Red Leg Nation something that I think everybody needs to schedule, circle on their calendar. The big West Coast road trip in the middle of August, August 17th to the 25th, the Reds go out to Arizona, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. And how many times have we seen it? West Coast road trip, when the Reds are in the hunt, ends up being a disaster. You're right. You pointed that out. And how bad does that scare you, given this team's history, this franchise's history?
Scares me a lot, and this may be an incorrect memory, but I seem to remember in the Pete Rose managing era in the late 80s that every year they seemed like they'd be in the hunt and they'd go out to the West Coast and get shellacked and the season was over. It seemed like it happened 2, 3, 4 years in a row. I may be wrong, but the West Coast just doesn't seem like it does this franchise any favors.
Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't seem to do the teams from this city any favors.
That's
the Bengals
true.
Don't play well on the West Coast either.
Where do the Bengals play well?
Don't start now. a guy that watches soccer should not even make fun of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Easy now. That's real football, soccer, okay? Yeah, I don't want to talk about your American football. But you're right. It seems like we'll have to look at the schedules from those late 80s and all the way through the 90s, but it seems like the West Coast has always just killed the Reds. And that's a I'm scared of that trip. I can see the Reds, you know, hanging on to this lead one or two games up or, you know, tied right around there and then going out there and laying a big egg. So let's hope not. We'll knock on wood for that. But, if the Reds can hang on through that, get into, the beginning of September in good shape, you know, you're right. The schedule does favor, slightly the good guys. So, I can't believe we're talking about this. It blows my mind.
Yeah, we sure wouldn't have thought this when we started talking before the season. We wouldn't have bet on that we'd be talking like this at this time of year.
No, and I think the word that you used to describe the season earlier in the podcast, I meant to point it out, but fun. You know, whether you think the Reds are going to stick around in it, whether you think it's a fluke, they're playing over their heads or whatever, and there are some skeptics, obviously, in the comments at Red Leg Nation. You can't deny that this season so far, from beginning to end pretty much, has been fun. It's been a blast to follow this team. They're playing hard and, you know, winning some crazy games they shouldn't win, obviously losing some they shouldn't have lost. But, you know, whatever happens, if they keep playing this kind of baseball and it's fun to watch and hanging around the playoff race, you know, hey, this will be the first enjoyable season in a decade.
Yeah, you and I were talking earlier that we both just started reading Wire to Wire, and even just in the beginning of the book, it's easy to tell. I think there's some marked similarities between this team and the 90 team. They seem to be very close. They play aggressive. They seem to play aggressive baseball. The pitching is pretty good. They don't have one big guy. You know, there's a lot of guys that contribute with the bat. I think there's a lot of, we don't have Nasty. Well, I wish we had the Nasty boys, but, other than that, I think that there's some similarities between this and the 1990 team.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, the bullpen's not as good. The starting pitching may be a little better than that 90 team, really, when you look at it, you know, on the whole, although we don't have a guy like Jose Rijo. Yeah, there's some similarities. You don't have to squint too hard to see some of those, and that's kind of what's been fun about celebrating this 20-year anniversary of those wire-to-wire Reds, is to have a team that is so similar in a lot of respects. They both have, had both this team and the 1990 team outstanding shortstop. Oh, no, wait a minute. Larkin might have been a little bit better than Orlando Cabrera. I might be remembering that wrong. But you're right. It's been fun. I'm going to enjoy being at the ball yard this weekend when they're celebrating the anniversary, and Chris Sabo's getting inducted and they're having the big MC Hammer concert, huh? What about that? I can't believe you're going to miss the MC Hammer concert.
I can't believe you're going for a Chris Sabo bobblehead.
Oh, that's the only reason I'm going is to get the Chris Sabo bobblehead. No, that's not true.
You know what? Yes, it is. Anyway, I was just looking at, we've talked about the Reds playing over their head and all these things. But, according to the Pythagorean theorem of baseball, with the runs and the runs scored and the runs left, the Reds are exactly where they should be.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting.
Yeah, and just, a week ago they were 12 games over. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they've won some close games, and early on it looked like we were getting a lot of balls bouncing our way and maybe some luck. But on the whole, they are who we thought they are in a lot of ways, but maybe a little bit better. It's crazy. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. Prediction for the second half?
In the last week or so, they pardon?
Go ahead and finish what you were going to say there, and then we'll make predictions for the second half.
They've kind of missed some opportunities to kind of lengthen this lead. If they'd have played a little bit better baseball on this, especially in Philadelphia, they could have went into the All-Star break with maybe a 4 or 5 game lead. I don't remember exactly what it could have been, but there was some lost opportunities this weekend. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. So let us hear it. You got what do we have to look forward to in the second half? Any predictions for us?
I really don't have any predictions. I made predictions before the season started, and they've all been wrong. So, I could continue to stick by those. I've sat through too many losing seasons to be optimistic. I hope things work out well for the Reds. I'm going to be rooting for them, but I just see impending doom, and I hope I'm wrong. If we lose a Votto or a Phillips or a Roland for any extended period of time, I just don't think we've got the depth to fill it in. And if that would happen, I'm afraid the front office would do something drastic to try to fill a hole, which hurts the team in the long run. I'm Chicken Little. I feel like the sky is going to fall at any moment.
Yeah, and I'll never criticize anybody who wants to be, sort of see the glass half full in some ways because, we've been beaten down for the last 10 years, and they've teased us, and it's never worked out. I'm like you. I'm very hopeful, and got my fingers crossed, and I'm going to be cheering for them every night. But I think I'm going to chicken out like you. I don't think I'm going to make any predictions either. I do think the Reds are going to be around, be in the race the rest of the year. It's a terrible division. The Cardinals are not that good, frankly, and they've had so much injury to their pitching staff. So many injuries to their pitching staff. I would not be surprised for the Reds to be in it all the way. Let's just hope that it gets down to the final days and the Reds are healthy. And, who knows? You can't ask for a whole lot more than that, frankly, given what we've been through the last decade, to just have the team going into September with a chance.
That's all we can ask for. And before we sign off, let's congratulate our spotlight guy, Matt, for his promotion back up to AAA. And for his start last Wednesday night when he threw pretty good against the old Indianapolis Indians up there.
Yeah, he keeps doing what he's got to do. He's successful everywhere he goes, and we couldn't be happier for Matt Klinker. had a conversation actually the other day. John Adkins, reliever at with Louisville, you know, he just got released actually, and he's a really good guy. He said, you know, I wished him well, you know, whatever he's going to do next, wherever he hooks on, hopefully somewhere. He says he's not done. He wants to try to hook on somewhere. He said, something to the effect of, how much he liked Clinker. And, he said he gives him a hard time and calls our site, Clinker Nation. Everybody's sort of rooting for, it's not just us. I mean, you know, he's such a good kid, and we talk about our depth in pitching, and I'm not sure where Matt fits in there, but what does he do? He keeps his head down. He works hard. He goes out there and he's successful. So we've got our fingers crossed that he's going to get his shot.
Yeah. If not here, somewhere else, you know, I really hope it's here. But I just want what's best for Matt. I've gotten to know him pretty well, and his family, and they're all quality people. I've met his sister in Louisville. I've met his parents a number of times. Had a beer or two with Matt over, you know, once and again. And they're just quality people from one the beginning to the end. And he's the kind of person that's easy to root for.
Absolutely, Bill. No question about it. We look forward to supporting Matt the rest of the year, hoping he gets his big shot in the big leagues at some point, hopefully with the Cincinnati Reds. I'm going to put you in charge of scheduling an outing for the Red Leg Nation community down there at one of Matt's starts in Louisville. Hopefully we can pick out a start where he's going to be on the weekend and get together and support him at the ballpark. Also, if you haven't weighed in on your choice for where we need to have our – well, not where, but obviously when we need to have our Red Leg Nation get-together at Great American Ballpark, go to redlegnation.com and sign in, vote in the poll, let us know when you want to get together. Going to have a good time getting together with all your friends and the people you've been talking with and arguing with and having fun supporting the Reds with at Red Leg Nation over the last few years. Bill, I believe that's all we're going to do today. Appreciate everyone downloading the podcast. You know, you've got a lot of places you could go for your entertainment. Appreciate you spending some time with listening to us ramble on about the Cincinnati Reds, our favorite team. For Bill Lack, this is Chad Dotson, signing off for the Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast.